Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. The title of today's show is Vettel 1.0 Reboot Successful, Loading, Critical MGUK Failure, System Failure. That is from Michael on Twitter, runner-up on Twitter from Toto's Wolf, Le Clerical Error. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Ready, and I'm joined by Matt Two Rumpets. How's it going, Matt? Look, you're all the way back in the United States. I preferred it when you were here.
You know, I was thinking it was a lot of fun to do a review with all of us in the same room. It just makes all the communication that much easier. And it was fun to watch the race. It was fun to watch the race with somebody else who had a timing screen.
Yes, I can also pretend it was fun to watch everybody, and I wasn't at all relieved to be watching it back on my own in isolation with headphones on, shut off from the rest of the world. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. We're also joined by PR man Chris Stevens and Missed Apex commentator. How's it going, Chris?
Hey, Spanners. It's been an enjoyable week of reminiscing about the karting from last weekend.
And making his debut, it's new Red Bull fan Nick Numbers Alexander, who we only bring on, apparently, to sabotage Red Bull's chances.
That's not true. Just because we had a referendum doesn't mean that we have a plan in place for actually leaving Ferrari fandom. So still carrying on with that for the time being.
We voted Frexit. We're getting Frexit. All right, Matt, let's have a quick run over qualifying. Leclerc now 9 victories in qualifying over his teammate Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah, he's looking very difficult to approach in qualifying. Vettel cannot get the car to go as fast as Leclerc. I mean, that's just it. And frankly, neither can Mercedes, nor can Verstappen or Red Bull or pretty much anybody else. I mean, Ferrari seem to have reached a place, finally, where they're able to do what they wanted to do at the beginning of the year and qualifying. But it's Leclerc who has the advantage right now over Vettel in a major way.
It's fascinating to see that what we saw in Singapore, where the Ferrari suddenly not only was very quick in a straight line, but could also get round the corners properly now. And we sort of have that confirmed.
Okay, Chris, I'll just say, for some reason, your microphone now sounds absolutely terrible. It sounds like you're just talking through like a sponge, and then you're in a bathtub as well. So something's going wrong there. I'll give you a chance to sort of have a little bit of a poke around. Matt, you were going to interject?
Well, as I am wont to do, I was simply going to clarify with actual facts what it is that Stevens was scrabbling at there. Namely, into wit, they are almost as fast as Mercedes around the slow corners. They are faster around the high-speed corners, but they are still slower in the medium-speed corners. And that actually wound up being a bit crucial because that allowed Bottas, when he was defending, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit, to always open up a gap down that straight when Leclerc was chasing him.
Okay, let's just move down the grid a little bit. Disappointing for Albon to not capitalize on having the third best car again. It's bad, isn't it, Nick? Because we've had high hopes for Albon, and I think we've kind of gotten used to this Red Bull treadmill, and everybody's already thinking, oh, he's the next one off the list. Incredibly unfair after only a few races.
Yeah, I don't know that he's doing himself any favors just with the way that he conducts his interviews. And I'm not trying to be critical at all. Please don't send any hate mail, but he just doesn't seem to have that confidence, that swagger, that self, what's the word? Entitlement, I guess, that some other drivers have. So I don't know that he's doing his best PR work there. And it was a very unusual crash in qualifying, to set himself up in the bad starting position that he had on Sunday. And he did great on Sunday to get back up to where he did. But unfortunately he was only in that position from his own mistake.
Cool. Let's explore where the race was won and lost. Matt, this is where I turn over to you as our strategy expert. Or are you? Because you and me fell out this afternoon over how we thought the race was won and lost. So this should be interesting. But in a race that was, I hate to say dull, but we'll explore why the race didn't kick off and wasn't exciting. A lot of talk about the track. I've got some ideas about the track and why mechanically it's not really working out. But at least we had the strategy element, and it played out in a way we could follow. And then, of course, we had the fascinating stuff with the Ferrari guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think if we're going to talk about where the race was won and lost, looking at the start normally is where we go. And it was critical for Ferrari to get Vettel in front of Hamilton. If you go back and look at races run at this race, when teams win, it's because they have a 1-2 and the second teammate protects the first teammate. Now, we sort of saw this happen in reverse order with Vettel and Leclerc, and now it looked like we were going to have the opposite with Leclerc and Vettel, especially with sort of the radio traffic that we picked up early on, seeming like they'd made a deal. He would let Vettel through, Vettel would give the place back. But as happens, when our plans encounter reality, turns out that Vettel was actually pretty rapid in that first stint, and poor old Charles could not get close enough to be given the position back without yielding precious, precious seconds to the charging Lewis Hamilton behind.
Okay, well, can we just sort of break down that slipstreaming? For people who were a bit confused, what would the aim have been? So why is this track particularly, is it just the length of the run down to the first corner that makes the slipstream so important? It looked like, obviously, we now know that Ferrari were playing games about who was getting the slipstream and who was putting themselves where. But it did seem odd initially that Leclerc wasn't defending that inside line at all. So you can talk about Vettel having a big overspeed, but you can't deny that Leclerc did not shut the door at all. He didn't look like to shut the door. It was a prearranged thing. He kind of just led him through. It looked a bit odd to start with. Like, he would normally fight a little bit harder than that in the corner. Obviously, it made a little bit more sense after that. But as far as the slipstreaming goes, it's a pretty smart bit of work to think, oh, well, I can put my car in a position where Vettel gets the slipstream and Hamilton doesn't.
Yeah, no, it was remarkably clever. It was good tactics. And it was wise of Ferrari. I think, you know, people will be giving Vettel an awful lot of stick for saying, you know, make him catch me. But I don't think he's wrong to have said that at that point in the race. And I say this because, of course, as you may know, I want to race karting.
Oh my
and
God.
If you go back and watch Chris's brilliant commentary, he says, oh, they're not attacking each other and they're pulling a pretty big gap. Now, granted, Bottas was never going to attack Hamilton. However, by not squabbling over who was leading in the early part of the race, they were able, I think Vettel was 7+ seconds up on Hamilton around lap 20, was it 24 or so that Leclerc went in? Anyway, you get my point.
Nick, before you get in, I will have to clarify, because Matt is clearly determined to make lots of references to the karting, because he won the loser final. Oh, sorry, the C final, with a very, very good drive as well. That's a marked improvement. But the video package that we did for the event will be out at least by Monday morning. So if you're listening to this on Monday and you fancy checking out what it was like for us at the karting event, the video is pretty well put together for the budget. We're incredibly pleased with it. We hope you will enjoy watching us race and be tempted to come down and join us for the next event. Nick.
Okay. So I want to talk about Ferrari Plan A. So even I think Sky Commentary might have had it a bit wrong. They kind of making it sound like, you know, Vettel gets by, he gets in first, they're running 1-2, and he is abandoning the plan or overruling the plan or rebelling against the plan to let Leclerc by. But it's as Matt was alluding to, that plan A even is not going to work unless they pull a gap to the Lewis Hamilton so that they don't lose so much time in the switch. If he's right behind both of them and they do the switcheroo, then Vettel's going to be vulnerable. So you're making all sorts of facial expressions. So by all means, do okay. I have this wrong?
No, this is your opinion. And as far as the listeners are concerned, I like to give the impression that I value everyone's opinion. But you two are both making out that somehow Seb was noble in his intentions were noble. And it was like, of course, I will honor this agreement that we made. That's not meant to be a German accent. I will honor this agreement, but it will hurt the team if I slow down now. It will hurt the team to let Lewis in. As if, had Lewis not been there, he would have been like, oh, absolutely, Charles, on you go. I think he would have done everything today to try and make sure that swap didn't happen. And I'm not saying that I blame him.
Okay. So I don't actually feel that I've expressed my opinion yet, because my opinion is a lot stronger than that. I don't like Plan A at all. I don't know if I assume that they made it after the results on Saturday, but I don't like any race strategy where one of the two drivers in the team is not allowed to win. And that's basically what I saw today, was that there was nothing that Sebastian was going to be able to do that was going to allow Ferrari to let him win. It was like, well, you know, Charles got pole, so he has to finish first, is kind of the impression.
Well,
go ahead and tear into that.
Well, okay, we'll go to Chris. Chris, is it that, or is it that the agreement was that, like, in the early phase of the race, Leclerc would get his lead back after sacrificing the slipstream?
Well, Leclerc was told not to defend turn two, and so I don't know what Ferrari were expecting to happen at any point in that race. Seb was always going to get a really nice draft. Do you remember in 2017 when Bottas won his first race? It's exactly how he took the lead in that race. They just massively complicated things for themselves by having this arrangement. Why not just let them go at it? Because we saw Seb had the pace to pull away from Charles. Now, obviously, there's things to consider: the dirty air, the tires overheating. This track is rubbish for racing on, but that's the way the cookie crumbles.
Yeah, the one reason to not do that is so that you have a Ferrari finish in first position. Plain and simple. Be it Vettel, be it Leclerc, Ferrari want victories. Every championship is off limits to them, but the more victories they take now, the better it is for overall team morale. And if you're looking at Formula One as a team sport, which it absolutely is, then yeah, the answer is we will run a play, and then we will sort it out. We will sort it out later, and that is exactly what they did.
Yeah, no, I like that description, Matt. They ran a play, and I love team tactics. I personally love it when the teammates get together to give each other slipstreams in qualifying, and the team that's able to do that better gets an advantage in qualifying. I've always liked those team shenanigans. I don't even mind it when the B teams get involved. If we go to full customer teams, then I don't mind that. I don't mind like roadblocks of Toro Rosso's basically pitting on the last lap just so they can stay out and inconvenience a Ferrari. I'm down with that. I think all that strategizing is good. And Ferrari have come under a lot of criticism today. Mainly, you know, I've played my part. I tweeted, wow, Ferrari are back. They've magically turned a red 1-2 into a silver 1-2. However, they went for a tactic, and I liked the tactic. It was a complicated one, and it was essentially then came down to man management. The situation today really made me think back to Rosberg Hamilton and made me go, didn't Mercedes do a good job with Hamilton and Rosberg? Because this is the other option when you don't have control of your drivers, because they clearly don't have both drivers just eating out of the palm of their hands. It goes wrong because the plan was let Leclerc back, and Vettel, having got ahead, he was like, it's hard to give up a lead of a Grand Prix. I bet it's near impossible to give up the lead of a Grand Prix. But the agreement was there. You will not be obstructed. You will get the slipstream. Charles will put himself in the right place to make sure you get the slipstream and Lewis doesn't. You overtake me, we swap back. Done deal. And then Seb is there going, well, I mean, I was going pretty fast. I got a pretty good start. I was probably going to do it anyway, so I'm not going to do it. And then he starts coming up with the rationalizations. Well, Lewis is too close. Let's see where we're at in a couple of laps. So, yeah, that's how I see it, Chris.
To be fair, I think he had a point about Lewis being too close or whatever. It would have made sense maybe later in the Grand Prix when things are spread out a little bit. But after five laps where Lewis is still a couple of seconds on your tail, nah, that's not the kind of game I'd be playing.
Should we quickly run through the radio calls as they came out? That might be a sort of nice scene set, because I think this is crucial almost in the history of Formula One, especially if Ferrari are title contenders next season. So just quickly, it was to Leclerc, Sebastian will let you buy the next lap. That was on lap six. And then to Sebastian Vettel says, you know, I'd have got him anyway, so let's break away for another two laps. That's like delaying the inevitable. That's like, can I read a story before lights out? Or, you know, I need to be tucked in. I haven't had my glass of water yet. I need the toilet. Okay, so as a parent, I recognize these tactics. Then he gets, this is key. He gets a specific order. Let Charles buy. That's lap seven. Let Charles buy. And Matt, I think this was where Vettel really is playing his game within the team. He says he'll have to close up. And that's it. That's where the fireworks started.
It is. And correct me if I'm wrong, but we may have heard similar things before in the Hamilton-Rosberg era. Am I wrong about that, Mr. Stevens?
Hungary, 2014.
Yep. Make him catch me. I'm not going to slow down for him. He's got to go faster. This is not an unknown driver tactic.
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong, but that was a situation where they were on different strategies and Rosberg was coming up behind him. So slightly different here, because last week in Singapore, again, Vettel got a better strategy. Whereas the counter to that is, you know, the difference with Mercedes was Bottas, don't slow down so you don't overtake him. That was like a team order because you've got a 1-2. This was different. This was multi 21 all over again, wasn't it? Or multi, what are the numbers? 16 and 5. This is multi 5-1-6. Where they had an agreement, and I know people will go, well, you're anti-Vettel, but if that was the agreement, you can't start throwing caveats in after the fact. You needed that caveat in before the agreement, where we go, I will let you back unless I made such a good start that it is clear I would have got you anyway. Because that's, I don't know, that's the difference for me, Matt.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't think the agreement was as nailed on as everyone is pretending it to be. I mean, I think the idea was to give Leclerc the place back because he yielded without opposition. But again, I'll make, from a practical point of view, the argument that given the pace differential between the two of them, which I see people in the chat room arguing, well, that's because Vettel was in front. Well, yeah, it could be. But regardless, the gap to Hamilton wasn't such that if you're Vettel, you want to give up 2 seconds a lap to Hamilton. And Ferrari should not have given that time up because they knew they were going to be up against the wall late in the race, and they need every second they can get. So conveniently, with Leclerc's tires going off earlier, Ferrari took the very obvious decision to simply pit him first, undercut Vettel, and solve the problem that way. And thus it was done, you know, without too much muss or fuss, in my opinion.
Muss or fuss, except from the radio of Charles Leclerc, who had been told off. It sounds like he'd been told off, like, don't do that whinging on the radio again. We'll sort it out when we get home. But Nick, you must have been a fan of this. It was, you know, it was married couples up and down the country must have been recognising this today, listening to the race coverage of the... So, Charles, we're going to try and sort it out. You're okay, yeah, Charles? Yes? Fine? You sure you're okay? Yep, completely fine. I'm cool. Except for these several things that I'm now going to tell you.
Yeah, we will we'll talk about it after the race. It's funny. It's only been a week since Singapore. I mean, time has really flown. And he was saying that he wasn't going to do this anymore on the radio. But clearly that goes out the window when things don't go according to the plan that you have.
All right, Matt. So we're going to get to that pit stop swap. Clearly Ferrari had decided, no, we're in charge. We're making that swap happen. And what we saw was huge. This is an absolutely monumental moment in Ferrari history in the current F1 era. They had the four-time world champion in the lead, not wanting to give it up. Ferrari decided they wanted to swap them. And they undercut Leclerc, but not just by one lap. They undercut him until the undercut was done.
Yeah, they did. But there was a tactical reason for that as well. Namely, and to wit, they were concerned about the possibility of, and everyone please get your irony detectors out now, the safety car. So the longer into the race they could run Vettel in the lead, the more inoculated they become against the probability of a safety car benefiting Mercedes. No, I mean, that's factual. That is absolutely every single lap, Vettel is in front of Hamilton.
Ooh,
if a safety car comes out, Vettel pits in front of Hamilton, and they've protected themselves.
Okay.
And as we saw, I know, I feel like I stirred up a bit of a hornet's nest here if I'm looking at people's facial
expression.
Triggered. But it is absolutely true. In the last race, they kept Leclerc out a long time, and they basically sacrificed him to let Vettel win. And I think the general sense of the team was that they owed Leclerc this opportunity. And that's why when Vettel immediately went to the radio, lap after they pit him, go, oh, my tires are going off. You heard crickets from Ferrari team radio about him coming in and pitting. They kept him out until they could clearly see he was losing too much time.
Okay, Nick, Matt's not wrong. That is a fact that by doing that, they had some inoculation to the safety car. It's the motivation I'm concerned with. Is that their motivation?
I don't think so. I think that's what you call plausible deniability. Oh, no, we weren't hanging you out to dry. No, we were covering the safety car.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that at all. I don't think that's what they were doing. Maybe he complained about his tires going off one lap before it really started to hurt him, but I think they were losing too much time for that argument to make sense to me.
Trouble is, they'll publicly say that, well, Leclerc's tires were going off quicker than Seb's, and that's why we boxed him first. Trouble with that is, it does kind of go with what we've seen across the season, that Charles doesn't quite have the tire management of Seb. So I guess if you were to line up those pieces together, it does form a convincing narrative.
Okay, I'm going to do the Occam's razor here. So Occam's razor, sometimes misinterpreted as just what's the simplest thing. I think for me, Occam's razor is, which situation do you have to manufacture least effort into? Which situation requires the least new information? And I think to me, it is perfectly clear that on the pit wall, they could not swap their two drivers. They absolutely had to do it in the pit stop. Ordinarily, if it was what Matt is saying and it was safety car go long, I think Vettel would have gone a lot longer. Leclerc came in for an undercut. He wasn't close enough for the one lap undercut. He was close enough for a few lap undercut. And they did it the second that the swap was made. That's when they chose to bring Vettel in. The reason for Vettel coming in second and at that time was to swap the Ferraris. And I'm not personally hearing any argument against it. Although, Matt, it was a good politician's defense that you put up, and I liked it. But then one final throw of the dice from Vettel. As soon as Leclerc pitted, Vettel knew that was the race gone. And that's when he's on the radio saying, my rears are going. I'm going off. Try and make it sound like you're ruining his complete race unless he pits right now, because he knows that he had enough to cover a one lap undercut. So absolutely fascinating times at Ferrari, Chris. Absolutely fascinating. If there was a title on the line, would they be more severe with Vettel?
I don't think they'd be stopping them from racing. They wouldn't have these kind of prerequisites about, oh, well, if you slipstream this person, then, oh, you let this person by on this lap. Now, if they were going for the title, you'd be seeing all-out war between those two. And that's just what we've got to hope for in 2020, really.
Okay, Nick, Vettel got driver of the day. Obviously, he didn't finish the race. How do you find that verdict? For you, was Vettel driver of the day?
Okay, I want to respond to Chris, too. So, cool, yeah. I mean, Sebastian and Charles were very close in the driver standing, so it does matter to them. That's it. That's my response to that. And to you, Spanners, Vettel was my driver of the day. Explain. I agree with it wholeheartedly.
So he was the driver of the day. He qualified second, which is, you know, the box seat in Russia. He got ahead. He had reasonable pace. What for you makes him driver of the day?
I mean, he got the launch. He got ahead at turn two. And I mean, he did everything he had to do, didn't put a foot wrong, and was putting in fastest lap after fastest lap. And my opinion, again, you can pretend to value that, is that he got hung out to dry, in the strategy, and they manufactured an undercut.
I agree.
For Charles.
Yes.
To make up for the accidental undercut that happened to him at Singapore. And, he unfortunately had the MGUK failure. Otherwise, without being hung out to dry and having a failure, I think he would have pretty much won the race, lights the flag.
And to be fair, because I agree with Nick, but you can't bring qualifying into it. It's a driver of the day, not driver of the weekend. Okay, all that matters is the Sunday.
Go on, Nick.
I don't know that I agree with that. I think if all that mattered was the Sunday, I'd give it to Albon. But I think that it was his own fault that he had so many cars to overtake. I don't understand the faces that Chris is making. Sorry.
No, I think, yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, you can't give him driver of the day because he made up for his own error. But, oh, by the way, someone in the chat room was saying, why are you guys giving Albon grief? Oh, I think we're not. I think we're actually generally Albon fans on the show. Hence, I think why we're expecting a little bit more, maybe expecting a bit too much too soon as well. So if we're guilty of that, I think hands in the air. Matt.
Yeah, I was going to say the chat room regarding driver of the day. Philip Allen says that Vettel was the only driver in the top three that did an overtake. So I guess you could make that argument as well.
Okay, good. Yeah, fascinating times. Obviously, then we had this MGUK failure. Is this, Ferrari reliability has been an issue, Matt. And I think we argued last season that Ferrari, it was this season when Leclerc lost the Bahrain victory. We had argued whether or not Ferrari were pushing that performance versus reliability envelope too high. And, you know, maybe with the recent success, they want to keep that gravy train going. And maybe they've just run their systems hot. Obviously, that's speculation.
Yeah, I know it was immediately diagnosed as an MGUK fail. And it was. You could see him not being able to get that horsepower. But regarding what actually failed, I've seen some speculation that it might actually have been his control electronics that went, and they did have a problem with them earlier in the year. They had to revert, if I'm remembering correctly. And if I'm not, I'm sure everyone will tell me almost immediately. Unlike MGUK, he does have a spare control electronics he can use if that turns out to be the failure, but they won't know till they get the engine back to Maranello.
And of course, people were asking, you know, why did he park it up and bring out a virtual safety car rather than bringing it back to the pits? And if you have an issue with your MGUK, you cannot keep driving that thing. You have to park it up and get the hell out of there because it is so, so dangerous.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw Luke Smith's tweet about that, but apparently it was an electronics problem that rendered the entire car unsafe, like park it and jump off of it kind of unsafe. And that's why he was not allowed to continue. And that's also why, given where he parked it, they chose to bring out the virtual safety car instead of double waved yellows at that corner.
But Chris, people were speculating that perhaps, you know, do you have the mental capacity in that car to go, I've got an MGUK failure. If I don't make it back to the pits, I can cause a virtual safety car. It's hard to argue that you couldn't have just made it one more corner.
No, it is. You cannot go a second longer than you have to.
Okay, cool. Matt, let's wrap up Ferrari and move on to Mercedes.
Fair enough. as far as Ferrari goes, it was incredibly unfortunate that the virtual safety car happened when it did. Leclerc was about 3 seconds outside of Hamilton's virtual safety car window when it was called. And had Vettel been able to go a couple of more laps at the rate Leclerc was closing on him, then we would have seen an entirely different race. But more importantly, it spoiled the entire end of the race, that virtual safety car. You were looking at an unbelievable amount of action happening in the last 5 to 10 laps amongst the leaders, with Vettel trying to overtake Leclerc, with Hamilton chasing on soft tires that were incredibly fresh and trying to catch before he burns them up. And, well, yeah, that was going to be pretty much it, because I think, frankly, under that scenario, Bottas is nowhere near them. But nonetheless, it would have been just tenterhooks all the way to the end. And instead, it just sort of sucked all the life out of it right then and there.
Actually, this seems like a good juncture to talk about the life being sucked out of the race. It's not the best racetrack in the world. I will go to Chris here and say, okay, so I'm not an anti-Tilke. I'm not an anti-Tilkedrome kind of one of these people. I think there's a lot of good Hermann Tilke track designs. This one fails in the same way as the Mexico Grand Prix. That's a Tilke circuit as well, isn't it? I know it was redesigned, but didn't Tilke do the redesign? I think he did. Yeah, we're all going, did he? I think he did. But it suffers from the same thing as Mexico with that stadium section. I know you like the stadium section. It's really cool. Oh, sorry, I thought you said you liked it. It is really cool. It's so cool that you've got this like baseball pitch with Formula One cars coming through it, but you can't do anything but follow through that section. So much in the same way as Barcelona, much in the same way as Mexico, here at Sochi, you have really slow corners leading up to your main straight, which means you have to stop in a line, slow down, wait for the other car to accelerate. And all it does is guarantee that you're going to have field spread. It guarantees field spread down the only overtaking points.
Yeah, even the Formula 2 and the Formula 3 races weren't particularly exciting. For me, Sochi is probably the worst track on the calendar. The first one I would do away with if I was in control of where we go racing. It's a track with no character and no soul, no real challenge. I will say the new generation of cars, the post-2017 ones, do suit this circuit a little bit better than the previous generation cars, but it's still very pants for Formula, for anything really. I think I've made my point pretty clear. I don't like it.
Pretty pants, Matt. That's a very good technical description of the track. But it's the last time we're coming here, isn't it?
May well be. There are strong rumors that we're moving, picking up sticks and moving to St. Petersburg in the not too distant future for this race. And if so, I think we're looking at a very different circuit.
Yeah, so St. Petersburg is an interesting one because they're also looking at getting a Formula E race. So it's still going to be a similar kind of thing, street circuit. Like, Sochi is a great venue. It really is. Using the old Olympic Park is genius, and it's a beautiful setting. But my God, the track they've come out with is boring. And everyone in the chat room is reminding me of Paul Ricard and Yas Marina, which would also be in the top three of my get rid of it list.
Just a few fact checks in here. I can confirm that the Mexican track was redesigned by Tilke.
Cool.
And then also the Russian Grand Prix track here is under contract through next year.
Oh, okay. So we've got one more terrible race at Sochi left. But from an F1 point of view, we've had loads of good races. We've come to two tracks where beforehand, see, this is the frustrating thing about it, is you kind of know, with the odd exception, you know that you're going to turn up to Monaco, get a very Monaco-y type of race where people, even with an engine default, can sit and just hold the pack up. Similar thing at Singapore. You know you're guaranteed a one stop because there's no point pushing any harder. You go to Abu Dhabi, you get a certain kind of race. You come to Sochi, you know there's not even tire wear to make it interesting. Barcelona has the odd exception, but generally a very processional race. So it's frustrating when you've got all these races on the calendar, but there's some where you know beforehand that you're in for this kind of race. But like we said earlier, Chris, at least we had this amazing kind of strategic element that we could follow, and of course the drama.
Yeah, this is what worries me about the prospect of going to a 25 race calendar. Like, how many duds are going to be on that? There's going to be some. But yeah, for me, this race was not about the race. This was about Ferrari and the internal politics going on there and that sort of civil war that seems to be brewing between the drivers. That for me was, you know, what the race was all about.
Oh, exactly. I mean, we've been sat here for 35 minutes and we haven't even talked about the team that secured a 1-2. So let's rectify that after this.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Well, we could go one of two ways. From a show point of view, which way shall I host this? Shall I do Magnificent Victory by the amazing Hamilton? No, I'll subvert their expectations. Ah, oh, Matt, I tell you what, Mercedes fluked this today. It was handed to them on a plate. What a gift.
So you start your race. You know you can't start at the front because you're not as fast as the other team. And it becomes obvious in the first stint that your original plan isn't going to work. So you revert to your backup plan and you execute flawlessly said backup plan until the racing gods look down their nose and say, you know what you need? You need a race win. Here you go, kid. And at that point, you're perfectly positioned to take advantage of it. And that absolutely describes Mercedes' strategy today. Now, I would have loved to have seen Hamilton coming on the last 10, 12 laps on soft tires, chasing down the Ferraris who'd been on mediums for 10 or 15 laps already, which is more or less, I think, where things were headed. But we didn't get that. But if you're Mercedes, you did everything perfectly. And when the chance was there, you didn't blink. You took it with both hands and you ran all the way to the finish line with it.
Okay, so Uzziah Syed in the chat room says, amazing. No, that's the wrong one. Sorry. He says, it wasn't Mercedes lucking into it. It was Ferrari throwing it away. It's Ferrari's fault. To a certain extent, I agree with that. But I think we're just going to focus in on what Mercedes did to win this race. And I'm obliged to read the super chat comments where people pay money to have their comment be highlighted. And we're really, really delighted for those contributions. And I do want to read them. Bradley Philpott has paid £1.99. for me to say, remember when I smashed Van Gien at the karting? Yes, yes, we will go on about the karting. I promise we'll do a special kind of offline review of the weekend because we're all still on a massive, massive high about it. But I think Mercedes did put themselves in the position, Matt, where if anything went wrong, they could take advantage of it. And they knew what they were doing. That started in Q2. They made that gamble to go onto the hard tyres. It cost them getting off the line, probably. I know there might have been a wheel spin, allegedly, but you do get a disadvantage off the line with the mediums. They took those risks. They made that strategy, and it was kind of, it was all in the hopes of, I guess there was three hopes. A, you can take advantage of a safety car. B, you can do an overcut that you know isn't going to work, so you come out on fresher tyres. But interestingly, on this track, with such low tyre wear, there is an option to go super long on your mediums. And I think Mercedes could have gone all day long on their tyres today. And I think that when they said, oh, target plus 15, I don't think it was they had a specific lap they wanted to pit. It might have been like an ideal lap they wanted to pit. I think that they were pitting in relation to Ferrari. So it was essentially Ferrari plus a bunch of laps to either A, give us better, softer tyres at the end, or B, there's a chance at this track that we can maintain our medium pace better than Ferrari, even when they come out on their new medium tyres, and actually start opening up that pit window again, so that we could find ourselves two-thirds of the way through the race with older medium tyres. We've been running better lap times than the Ferrari's tyres, who've gone off a cliff, and now we can come in for softs and come out in front. Like a, it's not an overcut, it's an ubercut, Chris.
What's amazing about that is that you, with a strategy like that, it's very favorable to if you get, say, a virtual safety car or even a safety car after that as well. They got exactly what they needed. But what I also love about that strategy as well is that it just would have put them in such a attacking position. Say we didn't have those, the SC and the SC period.
Yeah.
They would have been in such an attacking opportunity. Even, you know, there's very little deg. Just having those newer, softer tires would have put them in such a strong position. And as much as we saw, you know, Valtteri able to hold off Leclerc because Ferrari can't use that top end speed advantage as much in the race as it can in qualifying, the fact that they're really good in sector three would have put them in such a good position going down that front straight as well. It just adds up to a really, really nice strategy.
Nick.
Okay. I'm going to do the thing where I make the North American sports analogy again and you pretend to understand.
Everyone so get ready said, to nod along.
Okay. So to me, this reminded me of an American football game where everyone was expected. Hold on. I'll be fast.
I was going to say that.
Okay. Where everyone's expecting for Hamilton to be the quarterback and get the ball back with 2 minutes left and hope that he can march down the field and score on offense on the second stint. But instead, they had a pick six. So they intercepted the ball and ran it all the way back. And everyone's like, that's not what was supposed to happen. You're supposed to score points on offense and all that stuff. Because I don't know if you guys saw, but there were people complaining that, I mean, not the smartest fans, that pitting under virtual safety car was somehow like cheating. It wasn't fair and it should be illegal and all this stuff. And it's like, no, they put themselves in this position. It was, you know, maybe a little bit anticlimactic, but it's a very perfectly valid thing. They did all the right things to have the opportunity to do that. Yes, Hamilton is a bit blessed, but I mean, he was quick in the first stint and he was in the window.
I think there is an argument for it because in a lot of other series, they don't allow pitting under caution periods or VSCs in F2, for example. So yeah. This debate comes around every single time it, you know, decides a race win. I think there is an argument.
Wait.
What does that have to do with anything?
Yeah. I don't remember this argument coming when Lewis Hamilton lost it in Australia from a pit stop.
Yes.
I don't remember that.
Yes. Finally, how did that you Twitter miss feed. It?
No, I was probably too busy celebrating. I mean, being neutral. Let's have that debate quickly. I don't see any problem at all pitting when a safety car is out. I mean, you're under safety car conditions, so that's all safe. You're then under pit lane conditions, which are mandated safe. So there's no safety issue. Are you saying that you want to take away one of the random elements in F1 that mixes things up sometimes? Shall we ban rain also, Matthew?
Well, I think the argument specifically is virtual safety car versus safety car.
Oh, massive difference.
The
all
purpose
right, yeah,
could... of the virtual safety car is to neutralize the race, so that no one can gain an advantage, and
no,
it only works so far.
Is it? Is it? Yeah. Is that? No, that might be the method by which they action the virtual safety car. But the point of the virtual safety car is to be able to clear away an incident, be safe without bringing out the full safety car. We've got the safety car, but now we need a way to neutralize the race. How can we do that? The VSC. That's not the way
it
worked.
Like you've almost gotten to the point. Which is they don't want to bring the safety car out because when you do that, A, you collapse all the gaps between the leaders, and B, you send the lap cars around. So it takes a lot of the race to affect a proper safety car. But also the safety car affects the race with the other letter in front there. And the virtual safety car was meant to sort of keep the race in a status quo while the incident was cleared, and depending upon where it was, and if they felt it was safe to do it that way. So in the instance of a virtual safety car, and given that in other series, and certainly in Formula 2, I think as Chris was saying, they don't allow pits under the virtual safety car, it's not an unreasonable argument. However, Formula 2 racing is a lot closer, and allowing the pit lane open gives you that same random unpredictability that can give a team an advantage or turn a race around. So as soon as you close it, people will be complaining about the lack of action. As soon as you keep it open, people will be complaining about the lack of fairness. It's an argument we will never win.
And I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think Matt is making it out to sound a lot more complicated than it really is. The way I see it is that the virtual safety car, you don't need to collapse everyone together in order to clear the incident. So you don't. I don't think there's any, and maybe it helps get the race back under green flag sooner. Sure. But I don't really understand any argument that would say that, well, if we have a full safety car, you then can we're pit, collapsing yeah. up. So then you can pit. But if we're not, then you can't. No, it's just, you don't have to bunch up. You don't have to send out the safety car. We'll clean it up real quick. But of course the pit lane's open.
So a couple of people in the chat have been asking how you gain under a VSC. So maybe it's just worth it reiterating that because everyone else is driving at a reduced speed, you driving through the pit lane means you lose less time than you would have done if you were pitting under green, for example, because they're going down the straight less quickly.
Yeah, I think the way to put it is your competitors are going slower, so don't have the same opportunity to catch up with you while you're stop still, Matt.
Yeah, specifically 24-second pit delta under green flag, 15-second pit delta under virtual safety car. However, there's a second way you can make up time because each mini sector is regulated and some of them have turns. So how slow and how fast you can go depends on where you are in the mini sectors. And you're allowed to speed up and slow down. It's an average time per mini sector. So if your engineers are good, you can actually gain a reasonable amount of time depending upon where you are on track and how clever your engineers are.
Okay. I just want to, I think Chris was right to talk about what would have happened had we not had that VSC. Let's just say you could talk about how well Vettel would have done and what Vettel could have done, but his engine was doomed. The much more random factor is the VSC coming out. So without Hamilton being able to benefit from that virtual safety car, I think he would have had a difficult time getting past Leclerc and going for the win. At the beginning of the day, I said on a different show that I felt that the Mercedes had the pace. And actually, I think Mercedes have had the race pace in Spa, in Italy, in Singapore. But Ferrari have had, you know, they've had a blinder. Those races have come to them because they've defended well. They've been tactically better than Ferrari. And they've had specific tracks that allow you to do specific things. So at the beginning of the day, I thought, yeah, Mercedes probably do have that race pace. And I think pace-wise, they had Ferrari covered. But I didn't see the situation that was going to allow Hamilton to get ahead of the Ferraris.
And this is why Ferrari's qualifying speed is so important, because track position is so key, especially on tracks like Singapore and this one in Sochi, where it is so hard to overtake and you get mass field spread. As soon as you gain the position on track, it's so hard to lose it.
I think the chat room, they would like a course on British English to help them understand more of what's going on in F1. And I think we need a course in American sports so that we can understand any of Nick's analogies. And also, I liked you explaining the thing about the how you gain time under the virtual safety car. I think there's a lot of new fans to Formula One, and there's a lot of new fans who are listening to us. So I think at some point we'll do a little appendix of explaining things, because terms like undercut and overcut get thrown around, and actually a lot of people are going, undercut. I don't mind dwelling on the art of the undercut at some point. Nick?
Oh, I was just going to translate the football analogy really quickly to rugby. It's as if they dropped the ball and the other team just picked it up and ran the other way.
Okay, good. Fantastic. No? Hats off to Valtteri Bottas for that defense, Matt, for that defense of Charles Leclerc. I got the feeling that had he not nailed lap after lap after lap, Charles was able to get past. And if he'd have done that early, he might have had a chance to bother Hamilton and make him affect what he was doing. but it looked like Bottas'd as well as he could. I'm not saying he Mercedes'd as well as he could, but he Bottas'd as well as he could. Is that making sense, or am I just saying Bottas over and over again?
You're just saying it over and over again, so you can get me to say it the same way, which is never going to happen, but thank you for trying.
Bottas. I like it when you say Bottas. I defend you.
I appreciate that. Well, anyway, back to the race. Yes, in the first stint, our friend Valtteri did not particularly put a shine on his Mercedes performance. He was losing time, and it honestly looked like Mercedes was at the point of leaving him out to be a rolling chicane for the Ferraris when they came round after their pit stop, before the virtual safety car changed all of that. And that put him in third behind Leclerc and Hamilton. And then when the full safety car came out for Russell finding the wall, because Williams has apparently run out of parts and they're using duct tape instead of brake pads now. That's a joke. That's not real, please. Just to put that out there, because some people, sometimes I'm better at that than I think I am. Anyway, Ferrari, seeing the Mercedes on brand new soft tires, felt Leclerc would be vulnerable on the medium tires, and they pitted him under the safety car. He lost one spot to Valtteri, but they assumed he'd be able to get it back. And then at the restart, he came ever so close so many times, but when push came to shove, he could not get the job done. So hats off. When it comes to defending, Bottas did everything Mercedes required of him.
I agree. Before we get on to Formula B and the podium, I want to, you and I, we argue a lot about which is the better car, whether it is the Mercedes or the Ferrari. And I want to see where we are right now, because we had basically Ferrari, which was a much better version of the 2014 Williams. So it was just a series of kind of rocket launches, get it stopped and pointed, then do another rocket launch. And they've made that tactic work, but they seem to have found downforce in the last couple of races. Where are we? My gut is that the Ferrari engine dominance was somewhat overblown, and it was being exaggerated by the low drag philosophy that Ferrari were running. And now that they have a bit more downforce, are we seeing a leveling off of that straight line speed advantage, i.e. Leclerc couldn't just cruise past Bottas today?
No, because in qualifying, Ferrari is still gaining like 0.8 of a second just on the straights. And you can see it in the mini sectors when they did the side-by-side with Lewis Hamilton. The thing is, across the whole season, we've seen that advantage just isn't there in the race.
Oh, Matt is about to tech you. He is about to lay down some tech knowledge on you. Is there a difference in the way those corner speeds are achieved, Matt?
Yeah, there is. A lot of it is about maintaining momentum. But fundamentally, Ferrari was 0.4, 0.5 in qualifying. And in the race, when you looked at Leclerc chasing Bottas, it was around 0.3. Part of that is going to be him in dirty air. And part of that is going to be that Mercedes has a real advantage only now in the medium speed corners, which is where Red Bull, fascinatingly, is fastest of all of the cars. Mercedes has only a tiny advantage in low speed corners, and they have a disadvantage in the high speed corners. So how Ferrari has been able to add downforce back to the front axle, which has allowed them to balance the car properly, which has allowed them to extract more performance from their package, has been a story that has really only happened over the last couple of races.
And I will say as well, you know, we've been going to these tracks that are like medium, low speed corners, say Suzuka next race, for example, all high speed corners. So, you know, we could see a very different story there. Again, suddenly the Red Bull might be the challenger.
Fascinating. Let's move on to Formula B. Missed Apex Podcast is an ad-supported and a Patreon-supported podcast. If you want an ad-free feed, you can. For $1.99 a month, you can sign on at patreon.com/missedapex, and you'll get a private RSS feed that you can add to your podcast player, which removes the ads, and that's a feature of being a patron. If you sign up to the $5 tier, you'll also get added to our online Slack chat community. It's a great place to chat Formula One, especially during race days, and you'll get access to our patron-only podcast, which It's a worse podcast. It's less well produced, but we do kind of relax. We let our hair down and we just shoot the breeze. And Chris and Matt join me on there. And we talk about a range of things apart from motorsport and Formula One. We talk about our lives. We talk about my stupid cat that comes for walks with us. That's right. My cat comes for walks with us. I don't take my cat for a walk. It's an important distinction. That when those $5 patrons come in, which they have been actually thick and fast, it gives me a lot of hope that we can keep Missed Apex podcast going. In fact, I'm feeling bullish and optimistic for Missed Apex 2020. I won't go into the reasons why I might not have been before, but thank you for those who did support us, and please do consider supporting us at patreon.com/missedapex. Matt, the chat room, who got there by looking on YouTube and searching for Missed Apex podcast, have they amused you once more? Is that smile on your face from my impassioned Patreon plea, or is it a comment from our chat room attendees?
Oh, you know me too well. It's a comment from our chat room attendees. They have made a clever comment, and I will save it for the end of the show.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go to Formula B. I want to start with Albon a little bit. There was one comment that really stuck out, and I'll bet Nick picked up on this. When he was complaining about his brakes not working, and, you know, he's basically saying, you know, at 200 miles an hour, I'm hitting the brake and nothing's really happening. And his team just goes, copy.
I didn't actually hear their response. I guess I must have missed it because it was so short.
It was short, and because you tuned out after the Vettel stuff.
Yeah, no, I just turned the TV off at lap 20 and assumed that everything worked out from there.
I have to say, you watched the race on delay. So at 4 o'clock UK time, I got a message from Nick, a heartbreaking message, because I know how much Nick is passionate about Ferrari and Sebastian Vettel. We've watched the race and, you know, on the panel, there's a few Hamilton fans. I'm completely neutral, but who was celebrating the Mercedes victory. And Nick just sends me this message saying, I'm not reading any social media. I haven't watched any of the WhatsApp comments coming in. I'm about to watch the race now. So if you need to tell me anything about the show tonight, you know, let me know. And I'm thinking, they're going, Oh, Nick, my sweet summer child. And I just texted you. And this was not sarcastic, Nick. I just had to give you a spoiler-free message. So I just said, okay, mate, enjoy the race. And I was like, oh, I felt bad.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't want to know anything about the race. I just wanted you to know, you know, as the show is coming up for us, that I'm not AWOL. I'm just watching the race because it started at 4 a.m. here, which is entirely too early.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, that is much too early. Okay, Matt, Robert Kubica confirmed as not going to be with Williams next season. George Russell puts it in the wall. Kubica just stops.
Yeah, stops. And we are told, and by we, I mean it was broadcast on the TV, that they retired him, quote, to save parts for the flyaway races at the end of the season. And if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know about Williams right now. I mean, this is like a Caterham levels of, oh my gosh, isn't it?
So hang on, I'd not heard that. A Williams source literally said it was to save parts.
Yeah, they announced it during the race, or the post-race broadcast. They're like, Kubica was retired to save parts for the flyaway races.
So they didn't have parts for testing. They are pulling over their second driver to save parts. And yet they will look cameras in the eye and say it's not a money problem. And I know people who have spoken to senior Williams people, and they are towing the party line. This is not a money issue, they say. And they are united and consistent in saying that. How can it not be? How can Williams, being 3 seconds off the pack, not be down to money?
There's no other real explanation. I mean, you can see money buys performance if it's cleverly spent. So the only other argument is they had money, but they spent it all poorly. But then they have no money. So then money is the problem now, isn't it?
What else stood out for you in Formula B? There was a great few battles there. Where do you want to start? Or Nick?
Ooh, I think we should.
Nick?
Oh, I just sad for Nico Hülkenberg in Formula B. Didn't really work out very well for him with his pit stop, with them dropping the car and him having a 7.5 or an 8 second pit stop. Finished 10th and only got 1 point. Bad result for the team compared to their main rival, McLaren, finishing 6th and 8th and picking up 12 points, I think. But if Nico had a reasonable pit stop, I think he could have actually finished ahead of Norris.
And he was pretty angry on Twitter as well, like going, just 10th, and with lots of emoji that indicated that he was unhappy, Matt.
Yeah, but speaking of McLaren, triple digits in the Constructors' Championship for McLaren for the first time since, I think, probably Hamilton left-ish. Yeah, probably.
Sainz was my alternate driver of the day. I mean, not only was he briefly third going into turn two, which is funny because he was racing a Mercedes, and they're going to be partner up for engine performance in 2021 onwards. I found that quite funny. But McLaren have really taken the stride in the Formula B standing. I know, like, you know, the low speed corners, it kind of suits their car a little bit better. I think Norris got a little bit screwed over by the virtual safety car. But he had a bit of a tougher first stint than Sainz. But Sainz is really on it, especially when you consider the beginning of the season. Norris came on really, really strong, and Sainz has ruled him back in.
So just a word on those Formula B, the young pups, if you like, coming through. Lando Norris is like, there's a cultured humour. He's trying to be funny. Carlos Sainz is just mad, and that comes across as funny. But you had... I think it was Natalie Pinkham and Jenson Button on the driver parade. And they happened to be talking to the young guys, Albon, Verstappen, Norris, and I forget the fourth one, but they were giving them so much grief for being young. And they were going, look at these guys. They all love each other so much. Look at them. Look at the little racing drivers. Anyway, I just thought it was really funny how much they were patronising them. But because they are basically kids on tour, they're doing lots of pranks, they're getting on, they do seem to genuinely get on. But that's because we do have a lot younger demographic, Matt, these days.
Yeah, they do. And it is, what do we call it? Oh, a breath of fresh air, us old people.
I don't like it. They need to get off my lawn, is what they need to do.
But to see them genuinely enjoying being there and doing what they do so much, it's a nice contrast to the older heads who've been doing it a long time and for whom it's, although they may derive great enjoyment from it, it is very clearly also a job and comes with a lot more pressure than the kids at McLaren seem to be feeling. Sainz, maybe not so much a kid, but you get my drift.
I'll tell you who didn't have a good time in Sochi. Kevin Magnussen, who was having a wonderful time battling for points, and then he got a beeping quote penalty over a stupid, idiotic curb infringement.
Wait a minute, though, that must have been his second offence. Well, what was the first thing he did where he got the warning flag?
The driving standards are so different.
It's not different, is it? It's not different at all. It's just not Monza, Matt.
It's not Monza. But let's talk about Haas a little bit because, well, first of all, we have Grosjean. Where did he qualify? 8th, I think, and immediately out of the race. And actually, pretty much entirely not his fault at all, but whatever.
Whoa. You're just going to sit there and arbitrarily assign blame? Unacceptable.
Yes.
Whose fault is it?
You know that's not what we do here. So, yeah, there was an incident on the first corner between Grosjean, Ricciardo and Giovinazzi. The race commentators declared that to be a racing incident. It's just one of those things. We don't do that here. If you're new to Missed Apex podcast, we assign blame so we can explore the racing rules of Formula One. Who should we go to first? Nick, I sensed you had a different opinion to me. Whose fault was this?
Oh, but I changed it to the correct opinion in the meantime. Should I go with the original opinion?
Go on, defend your opinion.
I watched the onboard of Grosjean, and I thought that it must have been his fault for not leaving more room. But then once you see some more angles and you see Giovinazzi's onboard and you realize that he's just shoved his car in between two other cars, then you realize that it was pretty clearly his fault. Maybe you guys agree or not, but I guess how strongly I saw it when I saw that onboard, I'm surprised that he didn't get a penalty there, especially because he damaged Ricciardo and Grosjean and got away without any apparent damage himself.
Yeah, he was the one who was kind of most aware of what was going on there, because you could argue Ricciardo couldn't see Grosjean and Grosjean couldn't see Ricciardo. And because that corner is so wide on the entry and it just pinches in at the apex, there's not really a lot you can do around the outside. And Ricciardo would have been so tight on the way and he was always going to go wide. So Giovinazzi was the one with the most situational awareness of what was going on there and still just decided to go for it. And I am amazed the strength of the front suspension on that Alfa Romeo taking two big hits on either side and just carrying on.
Maybe
if it was bumper cars.
Maybe they reinforce his car, but yeah, that's how I saw it as well. Two drivers were having a fight. Two could have gone into that space. Giovinazzi was like, no, no, me. And I think you should have lifted off and let that situation occur in front of you. Nick, sorry.
Oh, I just thought it was really interesting as well. When they showed the replay on the live broadcast, the way that Grosjean spun and the way that Ricciardo spun, it was like completely synchronized. Did you notice that? It was like synchronized swimming for F1 cars. They did the exact same spin at the exact same time. And Grosjean just hit the wall and not Ricciardo because he was closer to the wall to begin with. It's just very unfortunate for him when he did qualify relatively well.
Matt, you've yet to assign blame. Are you in agreement with everyone? You can continue your general Haas point. I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. I was assigning blame to Giovinazzi. My only quibble would be, I think he did realize he was in a very, very bad place and tried to back out of it, but it was already too late. The wedge had closed. And so basically he caught both of their rear wheels with his front wheels and it broke Grosjean's suspension immediately and damaged Ricciardo's floor beyond the ability for him to really be able to carry on for the rest of the race. And then he was apparently remarkably otherwise unaffected by this. So there you go.
All right. I think it's time we move on to the podium. No. Again, typically, Matt, every time I try and move on, you drag me back in and you give me those eyes that know it's going to be more grief if I don't let you do it. And you're just going to be talking about it anyway. I'll go, let's move on to the podium. And then you'll say what you were going to say anyway.
Yeah, which was my original Haas point, which was they had genuine race pace today.
I literally said, do you want to continue your Haas point? And you said no. This is why everyone hates you. Let's move on to the podium. I failed to secure a podium at Missed Apex Karting, but I did. I did finish 10th out of 48, right? But do you know, it's an interesting fact. It's something I've learned over the years of putting on these karting events. I think we've put on about 9, but this is the 4th official one. There are people who turn up to karting events in their own gear. The rental place has like loads of suits that you can borrow, but they turn up in their own. They spend hundreds of pounds. Who would do that? And I tell you what, all but one of them didn't win. Imagine turning up to a karting event in your own gear and not winning. What a bunch of losers. So thank you for your support and thanks for coming to the event. Hope you enjoyed it. But the only actual award that counts is the Rental Suit Championship. So we have an award for the people who don't wear their own suits. We call them OSWs, own suit winners. So the prize for the best rental suit, look at that, it's mine. I'm so happy with this. I finished 10th, Chris. I'm the real and only winner that counts.
People are going to say it's a fix. The guy who conveniently won the only one that mattered. It'd be like if Bernie Eccleston won races.
I mean, yeah, I did manufacture a trophy that was given to 10th place, which I then won. So maybe, Matt.
Yeah, maybe. And, you know, not that I'm here to pick any kind of technical nits or anything like that, but I'm pretty sure that wasn't a rental helmet I saw you in. Fairly certain those weren't rental gloves either, if I'm being really picky.
Yeah, it's very clearly called the rental suit. Yeah. I didn't wear my own boots. Okay. It's called the rental suit championship. And the helmet was the driver comms helmet, not my own helmet. Brad also wore that helmet. We had a great new feature this year, which you can see on the video, which should be up on our YouTube channel on Monday, where the commentator, Chris, could press a button and actually talk to one of the drivers as they were going around. And it was incredible. They were, obviously with me, it was, what's going on? I'm desperately trying to catch people. I'll do my best. Oh my God, they cheated. I was robbed. Right. But then when we spoke to Brad, it was really kind of calm. This is what I'm doing. This is where everyone's defending. And then he kind of went, oh, hang on a minute. I'm just doing an overtake. I pulled off an overtake for the lead and then carried on, you know, describing what we did. It was an absolutely fantastic feature.
Oh, yeah, it was completely. It was funny. He was like listening to Brad. He's like, oh, yeah, now I'm going to do some calculus in my head. And, oh, hey, has anyone ordered lunch yet? And, oh, gosh, I think I forgot to do my laundry before I left. And, oh, hang on, I'm going to win a race here. And, oh, yeah, did you see that new show on TV? It was just ridiculous.
And I didn't sound quite as calm.
He had the coolest line, though, when he was chasing Van Gene. I've got him now.
That was it. I've got him now. There we go. Van Gene as well. He puts up a lot of bluster about how good he was. And actually, he was fantastic. Really, really fighty. I will share the punt Gene moment where Philpott ran him out of road, ran him off the track. And Van Gene was like, nah, not having it. And just came back on track. And there was a very distinctive clatter of cart on cart. Anyway, sorry, the podium. This is the bit where we give away awards. We have a Thing of the Weekend award, and I think we'll go to the person who looks least prepared. So, Nick, you look surprised that someone might come to you. Who was your Thing of the Weekend this weekend?
Sebastian.
Oh, so you're not changing. You're not changing to Red Bull fandom at all, are you? You've reneged.
I don't know.
So you're giving it to Sebastian Vettel.
I think I could have anyway. I mean, he did win the official F1 driver of the day vote, and apparently he was quite pleased to hear that news. When he won in Singapore, he said that he appreciated all the fan support and messages and stuff like that. So if anybody knows how I can write Sebastian Vettel a personal message, let me know. Send him some support. But no, I think he did. I think he did brilliant. I think he did everything that he could have done and more, maybe.
Vet Fossey confirmed. All right, we get it. Okay, so you're giving your Thing of the Week to Sebastian Vettel. Chris Stevens, who gets your Thing of the Weekend?
Oh, Sainz, hands down. I mean, what a drive! What a weekend!
Okay, good.
Simple.
Yeah, good. That's fine. Matt, who do you give your Thing of the Weekend to?
This will be controversial, but I know you'll choose Hamilton and Mercedes. So I'm going to go with Kevin Magnussen post-penalty, rocking out the quali laps at the end of the race and finishing P9 ahead of Hulkenberg when he had a five-second penalty that he had to stay in front of. And I think if you're Haas and you've had great quali pace and terrible race pace the whole year, to see him able to do that at the end has to be like, oh, hey, you know, Alpha's only 7 points ahead of us. Maybe P8's possible before the end of the season.
Chris, are you going to interject?
No, I was going to talk about Magnussen's magnanimous acceptance of that penalty and then realized it's going to be really good for the Pony Award.
Yeah, okay, that's true. I'm going to give my Thing of the Weekend to Valtteri Bottas, who, by his body language and by his demeanor, I'm sure he's not happy about playing this number two role. I'm sure he's not, but he's doing it, and he's doing it without fuss. He's doing it without bother. He's doing his job. He might well be brooding for a relaunch next season, but this season he's doing his job. So even when he's interviewed, I had a good race, I did what I could. You probably shouldn't say, I couldn't keep up. That terminology makes you look bad. But when it came to doing his bit, I'm sure he was completely prepared to be left out and to interfere with Leclerc coming through. If before the virtual safety car, I think Leclerc was 9 seconds off Bottas, was closing that gap down. I'm sure he would have played, you know, the spoiler's role if it had been asked of him. And he's just dealing with it in a really mature, sensible and professional way. So Bottas is my Thing of the Weekend. We have a bad thing. We have a bad thing award, don't we? And that is voiced by the lad Treeface.
Oh no, you missed the apex.
It's the bad thing award. Who missed the apex for you, Nick?
Again, I've already mentioned it today, but the Hulkenberg pit stop, so that crew there and dropping the car cost some valuable points. It was painful to watch for me.
And Matt, who missed the apex for you?
Alpha. They just were not really present and didn't do a great job and had problems and driver mistakes and yeah.
Okay, well, we'll tell you what, you've done Alpha generally. Mine genuinely was Kimi Raikkonen with the jump start and then the hesitating afterwards. Like, you've done loads of these now, Kimi. I don't want to judge too much, but that is just it's almost like your head's not in the right space. A jump start is criminal, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, 307 starts. Although we've seen Fernando Alonso do it. My very first impression of Fernando Alonso was him jumping the start, because in the first race I ever watched, he did that. And I thought, man, what an idiot. not knowing anything about him. It's funny you say that, actually, because it was my toss-up for the missed apex was going to be Kimi's left hand for dumping the clutch too soon, or George Russell's left front brake disc for seizing up like that.
Okay, chat room, someone said that Albon Haight missed the apex. I don't think so. I think we're calling it as it is, and we're optimistic that a talented driver can pull it out of the back. But he's not right now, Nick.
No, there's just no winning. I mean, I even prefaced everything I said about Albon with, I don't want to criticize Albon, and then just you
what's
can't.
With all the Albon criticism? No, but it's fine. If you're a fan of a driver and people are criticizing him, then yeah, it does kind of hurt a bit, especially if you're, you know, looking for good. But I would say we are people who are wishing Albon well as well, which is why we're wanting a higher standard. Chris.
But God forbid we ever point out when he does something drastically wrong, like he did in qualifying. That's justified criticism.
I liked my, Nick's breakdown earlier. It's, you could put that as honest and self-deprecating. But Formula One is as much about selling yourself and being a package, and it's as much of a power game and a political game. And although it sometimes seems stupid when drivers will blame anything else, anything but them, it does kind of, you know, you fake it till you make it, and it does have an effect.
When did I do dangerous driving?
Oh, yeah, there we go. When did I do dangerous driving? When you deliberately pointed your massively expensive pointy sports car at another driver on purpose. And then, that's when. Right. No, I'm not going to say Stroll chat room. In fact, in the last race review, didn't Stroll get my thing of the weekend? Well, I was certainly very, very complimentary about his racing. I've nothing to say about him in particular in this race so far today. Some people saying the commentary. So obviously Martin Brundle was off doing VLN with Brad and with Alex Brundle as well. So Paul de Rester stopped in. Now, I am guilty of finding his pronunciation of Mercedes and mediums very jarring. I think it's a very extreme version of that. However, it is a regional accent. It is his accent. So it is a little, we're saying that we just expect every commentator to be a 40-year-old English man from Suffolk or whatever, or from the home counties, is not correct. So yeah, you might find it jarring, but let's just get used to it and judge him on his merits.
It'd be nice to get an American on.
No, that's guy. Ridiculous. Shut up. Shut your face. How do I mute Nick? Right, okay. Where are we? We've done all the Missed Apex Awards. Pony, I guess. Have I lost my pony bumper? No, I think it's here.
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
Over to Chris.
K-Mag. Clear and simple. He actually came out and just completely insulted the stewards. And say, oh, well, you know, the stewards are human. They make mistakes a lot of the time. And he said a lot worse things that I can't say on this family-friendly show. But I just think, man, like, you broke a rule. Deal with it.
We dropped that ages ago. Curse all you want. My goodness. Go on, Matt. No, don't. I'm joking.
In the race director's notes was evaluated on each incident basis. It was not a hard and fast rule. If you miss it, you get a penalty. It was to be looked at each and every time and judged subjectively. He lost time. He lost a place. And then they gave him a 5-second penalty. And the thing I can say about it is he managed to drive enough of it away that he didn't wind up in 10th and he managed to save 9th place. I don't think under those circumstances. And if you listen to his post-race interview, he's like, look, I was mostly concerned with just keeping the car under control at that point, and I did the best I could, and then to give me a penalty on top of it just seems absurd, leaving out lots of words that, interestingly, Sky refused to broadcast.
Okay, so I don't like the... I mean, it was after Canada, the stewards came under like real heavy criticism, and yeah, it's fine. They're going to. People are going to do analysis like this. Yes, from me, Nick. You don't need to interject.
Yes. They came under criticism for no reason whatsoever because they didn't make a call that was controversial at all.
I think it was a fantastic call. Well done to the stewards in Canada. So yes, they are going to be under critical analysis. I don't think you need the drivers who know full well that that is on a public forum, adding to that and stirring up this kind of attack on the stewards personally. And that's what ended up happening. The stewards got attacked personally. Okay, you're in a high profile job. But I would like to see a similar system to what they do in rugby. Now, don't mistake me for someone who likes rugby. I think it's a terribly thought out game that was invented completely by accident. And not one single rugby fan who's not a referee knows the rules of rugby. The referee blows the whistle, then he just tells you whatever he wants because no one knows. Next time you're watching rugby in the pub, when the whistle blows, go quick, quick, quick. What happened? No one knows. They wait for the referee to tell them. It's a terrible sport. However, if you argue with the referee, so 10-yard penalty. I don't know how rugby works. You're an idiot, referee. Fine. 20 yards. Oh, what are you doing? 30 yards. And I think we should do that with Formula One as well. 5-second penalty. Oh, the stewards are idiots. They're so terrible. All right, 10-second penalty.
Black and white flag for dissent.
Black and white flag for dissent. Only in Monza. Oh, we cannot escape a pony for Leclerc, can we, Chris?
Yeah, I was just going to point out that actually Hülkenberg got a black and white flag today. I think that's just, especially after his comments on Thursday saying, oh, I've learned to just shut up on the radio and not say stuff like that publicly anymore.
Yeah, and then he just continued doing it. I'm really reluctant. This is what the Pony Award was made for. I sympathise with Leclerc. I have sympathised in those situations, and I think he's a really good driver, and he seems like a nice, motivated guy. He seems brilliant. But he comes across, I hate using the word, he comes across as whiny on the radio. It sounds super whiny. And you can't be a grown-up and keep saying, that's not fair. There's just, I mean, get angry. I'd prefer he got angry, Matt. I'd prefer he just kicked off.
We've all heard of resting unpleasant face. I think he's just got resting radio complaint voice.
Chris, you've spotted the same thing as me in the chat.
Yeah, chat rooms just pointed out the Sebastian Vettel bring back the V12s comment.
Oh, yeah, because they never blew up, did they? I mean, that was the only interesting thing about racing in the 90s, is you go, well, the grid's settled, turn one's finished. I wonder who'll blow up today.
We've got one more from the chat room, which I will simply adopt as mine since all the other good ones have been tossed out there. And this is from Keternath, saying that the FIA deserves a Pony Award for not letting our friend Kvyat race with his super special helmet livery.
Yeah.
And I think he has an actual reasonable point there. I mean, like, come on. It's his home race, for goodness sake.
It's like generally the same color. So yeah, just let him do it. You can't see it anyway, really, under the halo. So who cares? Met Clapton points out at least Leclerc is venting his anger on the radio and not doing stupid things on track. Well, amen to that. Yeah, no, absolutely. But the personality you hear on the radio isn't the one that you see out of the car. And it's just a shame is all, Matt.
Yes, I did come up with this idea that perhaps we should refer to Charles as a Monegasque from now on.
That is fantastic. Well done, Matt Trumpets. I think that brings us to the end of our show. Oh, no. No, I'm not going to forget it this week. It's time for, because we appreciate our chat room and we appreciate the fact that you keep us amused for the entire time of the live stream, we give out an award. It's called
Comment of the Week.
Okay, I'm so disproportionately happy that I remembered to do it before the end credits. Right, who are your candidates for Comment of the Week, Matt?
Well, our old friend European gets in early with, hello at Nick Alexander. Can I interest you into a very interesting Mercedes fandom period? You could still be on the panel sometime.
Okay, just for the sake of all Hamilton fans everywhere, Nick, could I please urge you to not ever be a Mercedes or Hamilton fan? Please, thank you so much.
Oh, okay, I can do that for you.
It's just, you are cursed. You are an albatross. Like Red Bull were panicking when they heard you were moving over there. They've just thrown a celebration party that you are refusing to Frexit. All right, who's our next candidate, Matt?
Has to be Anton Beale. First time watching the live stream. I always listen to the podcast. God, Trumpets is a handsome devil.
He didn't say that. That didn't happen. Did he say that?
Yeah.
People have just figured out that they get on the Comment of the Week shortlist by complimenting Matt. I'm going to have to change this. I'm going to have to, why not compliments for spanners and my sexy, rough, cold sounding voice?
Because there weren't any that I saw. Moving on,
yes,
immediately.
Get on with it, you crazy old man.
Lord Nuker with worst part of the strategy was to give Leclerc a functional radio button to whine on.
I mean, they could just turn it off. That is true. Go on.
A little duet between Richard McGill and Eyehammer, where Richard goes, Botas equals slow tass. And Richard, he replies, Eyehammer, he certainly didn't go tass. Which I just thought was funny.
These are Nick Alexander level puns.
Nicholas Andrew Grosjean's contract with Haas has a minimum DNF requirement.
Don't, Don't. Let's not be mean to Grosjean. Somehow, it just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right. He's a dad. He's got like 18 kids now. Someone tell that guy to get a Netflix account and then concentrate on racing.
Indeed. Anton Biel in with a more serious, no one wants to be Goose.
Too soon.
Okay. And then finally, our friend Michael Diestelhoff replying to who knows what, but with we let our remaining hairs down, asterisk, which seemed vaguely appropriate, at least for me and you.
Yeah, I got asked on another show earlier, will Formula One survive Brexit? And I paused for the longest time and pointed out as politely as I could that I had no strong opinions one way or the other. Who's our winner this week, Matt?
Oh, that's going to be such a tough one. But I think we're going to have to go with Anton Biel. No one wants to be Goose.
Anton, well done.
Comment of the week.
Okay, well, I think we've got a pretty relaxed week ahead, Missed Apex-wise. I caught up again with Brian Sims for a 20-minute chat about his time. Actually, he was the commercial director at Benetton when they were racing under their Italian license, so post-Schumacher years. He was also involved with Lola, so he knew the setup for Lola Racing as the MasterCard's debacle began, and he gave us a great insight into how the commercial funding of Formula One, now this sounds dull, but how it's changed from the tobacco era. It was fascinating to hear the way the teams had to adapt to no longer having the tobacco advertising. So we'll catch up with Brian midweek. I've already recorded it. I'll put it out midweek. Matt, we need to hook up and we need to do a Patreon podcast that talks about the karting weekend. It won't appear on this main feed. It'll be on the Patreon feed, but we'll make it so that anyone can listen to it because I want people to get excited about it and come to the next event. But also do go and check out on our YouTube channel. Look out for Missed Apex Karting at Buckmore Park, where we had an absolutely fantastic time. The video completely brings across the spirit of the day. You know, 55 people down there having a wonderful time, really well looked after by the magnificent staff at Buckmore Park. Thank you very much to Adam, who was our sales coordinator, and to Terry, who was a fantastic race controller for the day as well. In fact, all the staff looked after us well there. They are not paying me to say this, but it is a beautiful track. Matt, this is going to sound stupid, but it feels like a real racetrack. So a lot of kart tracks feel like kart tracks. That track somehow feels like a real racetrack, and you can kind of kid on that you're a real racing driver going around it.
Yeah, it does. Especially what I love about it is the elevation change.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. When you're lighting it up down the hill.
Paddock. Yeah, there's a downhill sweeping section where you have to brake downhill and changing direction, and you're at full pelt before you go into it. And throughout the course of the day, I never got used to it. So every single time I was going, oh no, here we go, it's that bit again. Oh my God, this is terrifying. I could never be a real racing driver. I criticize them, but I'm full of it, and I could never match them. I can't tie their boots, which is true. But yeah, great fun. So go and check out that video as well. Of course, we'll be back with our normal new show next Sunday. Wherever you catch up with us next, be brave, because wounds heal, chicks dig scars, but glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex Podcast. Oh my God, you guys, I was so brave. I was like super ill, but I was like, I'm gonna do it anyway. And like, I got through it.
Your job is to podcast, not whinge.
We will talk about this later, Spanners. Yeah, man. Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.